Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome in to Sports Daily on this Thursday. Tommy Caster here with you this morning. Max Power producing the program. Jacob Albrocht out today. TJ Cleland will be joining us here shortly this morning. You know, Max, I got to tell you here as we get going right off the top, it's tough, I think, a little bit for some folks to get up a little bit early.
I think you should have called him at like 4:30. TJ, you up?
I know. I gotta give him some grief. I mean, I don't know if he's listening right now on his way in, but I think the guy overslept a little bit. So that happens. You know, you're not used to the routine. You're not used to, getting up early and joining the program like that. So hopefully here in a few minutes, we'll have our buddy TJ Cleland joining us as he fills in for Jacob Albrocht today. It's a big day on the program. We kick off the NFL season. It's finally here. We are in it. We have been waiting for so long for the NFL season. It kicks off tonight. Cowboys and Eagles. We put all of the offseason storylines to the side. Those are done. Those don't matter anymore. And we actually get into the action on the field. It's that time. Cowboys and Eagles tonight kicking off the NFL season. And then tomorrow, we've got Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil. I saw the Chiefs landed yesterday in Sao Paulo. The Chargers got there a little bit before the Chiefs did as they start to get themselves acclimated to that stadium, that country. And all of that is we've got meaningful football kicking off this week. And then, of course, the main slate of NFL games kick off on Sunday. There's a lot to get to on the program today. We'll talk NFL. We will talk Chiefs and Chargers. We will talk about the Royals. They let another one slip through their fingertips. And I feel like their quest for a playoff bid is getting more and more difficult by the day as they let these games slip away. It's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. We'll get into that as well as the show goes on today. We also will have a couple of guests coming up on the program that we'll want to make sure that you know about. We've got PJ Glasser coming up in our next hour as he will be joining us to talk about best bets for the NFL Week 1. We'll also talk to him about college football as well, as we might have a little bit more of an understanding about some of those top teams in college football. We will talk to him as well coming up here on the program in our next hour. We'll also talk to Tim Fitzgerald. I've been looking forward to talking to Fitz all week long after we found out, after we watched the game in Manhattan on Saturday night as K-State narrowly beat North Dakota. I want to get his take on the program, get his take on what the heck is going on with K-State football. They have under-delivered and under-impressed through the first 2 weeks of the season. We'll talk to him about that in our next hour as well. That is all What's on Tap. What's on Tap is brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Pep Pep Pepperoni Pizza that's topped with sliced, cubed, and deli-cut pepperoni. Pep Pep Pepperoni is now available in a lunch or full size at Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. Max, I got to ask you, my friend, how you doing today? Happy Thursday.
Well, I'm all right now, but last week I was in rough shape, you know?
Oh, like a little Rodney Dangerfield there action for you. Glad you can be here with us. Glad you can all be here with us on the program. Multiple ways that you can join the show today. All you have to do is give Max a call on the KFH hotline, 869-1240. We'll get you connected here on the program. You can also leave us a video comment on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can join us that way as well. And those comments can pop up right up on the screen if you're watching our video stream. We can get to those as the show goes on today. You can also leave us a voice comment as well, a voice message if you're listening on the Odyssey app. All you have to do is open up that Odyssey app, click the microphone button, it's basically like leaving us a voicemail. You can leave us your message. We can play those back right here on the program. Multiple different ways for you to get in touch with the show today. Like I mentioned, a lot on tap here today on the show. I want to get things started right off the top by talking a little bit about the Royals, and we'll get into that with TJ a little bit later on this hour as well. But just another disappointing game against a team that the Royals should be beating. They've dropped the first two games at home in this series against the Angels. And I'll tell you what, if they have any hope of the playoffs, You've got to take these games. You've got to be able to win these games. And the Royals had a 2-0 lead going into the sixth inning, and it seems like this is a broken record. We talked about this yesterday on the program about how the Royals are unable to maintain a lead. And in this case, it wasn't the starting pitching. Ryan Burgert had a really good game, 5 innings pitched, 1 earned run. He struck out 6, did walk 3. So he had a little bit of traffic on the base paths. But all in all, it was another good outing for the rookie Ryan Burgert, who has been a good addition to the Royals at the trade deadline. John Schreiber, who has been pretty nails most of this season, he's the one that ends up losing the game. He takes the loss, 1 inning pitched for him, 2 earned runs on 2 hits. And when the Royals aren't scoring runs, this is what happens. You end up falling apart like this. You can't maintain that lead. You give it up with the bullpen in the middle innings. And then offensively, the Royals just can't get it done. 0-for-3, Bobby Witt Jr. had a forgettable game. Vinny Pasquantino, 0-for-4, a forgettable game and series for him. In fact, ever since the Royals left Detroit, Vinny Pasquantino is batting under 100, so he's slumping right now. Mikel Garcia, forgettable night, 0-for-4. When you've got your guys that are in the middle of the lineup, unable to deliver, unable to produce, especially in late-inning situations, this is kind of what the end result ends up being. Jack Caglione gets his first start back, 0-for-2 for him. It's kind of the same thing that we saw from him his last stint in the bigs, where he has a hard hit ball right at the right fielder and he's unable to make anything happen. And so disappointing all the way around. And I think in the large scale of things, as we're looking at the wild card race, it was a prime opportunity for Kansas City last night that they let get away from them, that they squandered, because you had everybody, for the most part, that you were chasing in the wild card lose. The Rangers lost yesterday early in the day. The Mariners got blown out. So you knew, hey, if the Royals can get this win, they could have been only a game and a half back of that third wild card spot. Doesn't happen. They lose the game. And they don't gain any ground whatsoever in the wild card. On top of that, with the loss, they also let in a couple of other teams who are playing good baseball right now. I mentioned the Rangers lost earlier in the day, but they've been red hot. They're nipping at the heels of, in fact, they're nipping at the heels of the third wild card spot as well. And they're a game ahead of Kansas City now for that third wild card spot, only a game and a half back. Kansas City's 2.5 back, and you've let the Rays back in it, who are now also 2.5 back, and Cleveland is only 3 games back. So things are really compressing right there to get to that third wild card spot. You cannot have these games happen. You cannot have these outcomes happen against a team like the Angels that you should be beating. You should, especially at home, you should be scoring enough runs to be able to take care of that. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for the Royals. They dropped the first two in this series, and they've got to salvage the series tonight against the Angels. We'll get more into that as the show goes on, as TJ Cleland joins us here in just a little bit on the program. I want to remind you, I want to let you know here on the program today that we've got so much to get to. We've got giveaways. We'll give away some Swing 365 golf. That'll be coming up in just a little while on the show. We'll give away some HTO as well. There's a lot going on, and we are just underway here on this Thursday morning on Sports Daily. So don't go away. Max Power producing. I'm Tommy Caster. We'll be right back.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Sports Talk on KFH is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing the program. My buddy Jacob Albrock joining us on the phone temporarily. Jacob, like I just mentioned, you can't count on much these days. And I think you almost have to include TJ Cleland in that conversation a little bit. How are you, my friend?
Oh, man. He needs the appropriate amount of grief. We're rocking and rolling from the from the beautiful St. Louis airport here in a long layover trying to get to Nashville.
How is St. Louis this morning at 7:17 in the morning?
It's something. I got to be honest. This is maybe my least favorite airport on the planet. Not a fan.
Yeah.
But it was like, I didn't even realize we had this. We woke up at like 3:30 this morning to catch our flight out of Wichita, and we landed. And I'm like, wait, we have a 3-hour layover? I didn't even realize we had the layover because we're getting in so early. But yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, good. Well, thanks for joining us for a few minutes until we can get our buddy TJ in place here and ready to roll. I got to get your thoughts on the Royals last night. Another disappointing outing for them. We talked about it before the break, and these are games that you have to win if you want to be a playoff team, if you want to get that third wild card spot. And it was a prime opportunity for them. The Rangers lost. The Mariners lost. They had an opportunity to be only a game and a half back. And it wasn't so much the starting pitching this time around. Ryan Burgert had a good outing, but John Schreiber, who's been really good this season, but probably a little bit overworked, has the bad sixth inning. And then the Royals bats really can't do anything. The middle of their lineup was absolutely silent last night. That's a gut punch of a game in a stretch of games where we've had a handful of gut punch games.
I mean, nobody wants to win this wild card. That's what it looks like to me. Like, nobody wants to go take it. The opportunity could not be greater. I mean, it couldn't be. Like, Schreiber's been so good for a while. We've said it before, they're going to have to hit their way into this thing. I mean, this pitching that's held it together forever, it's felt on a thread for a while, for a few weeks. They're going to have to score more against these teams that aren't very good. Like, you can't go through that game and score 3 runs. Like, it's not going to be enough. And it's frustrating because they have opportunities. They have the pieces in place. Nobody is in a brutal slump individually. It's just, again, it's sort of like it was during the bad stretch where they can't put their foot on the gas offensively.
You're absolutely right about that. And the 2 through 5 places in the lineup, from Bobby Witt Jr. to Pasquantino, Michael Garcia, Salvador Perez, 1 for 14 last night. I mean, like, you've got the heart of your lineup unable to produce. And especially in a situation where it's a tight ball game, you give up those 3 runs in the top of the 6th, and then there's really not a whole lot more that the Royals are able to do. They tie the ball game, but then give up the lead ultimately, and they're unable to come back. And the frustrating thing for me is that you watch that game and you get in the late situations, and while the team, I think, collectively has improved their overall offensive output, they can revert back very quickly to the frustrating outcomes that we saw so long this season, where they're just unable to deliver in clutch moments, and that reared its ugly head last night.
Yeah, Salvi struggling. I mean, he has been sort of the straw that stirred the drink for much of the season. So I guess we shouldn't be totally surprised that his struggles any individual week go into it. The good news is, and this is what's been, I'm generally optimistic, but I'm also realistic. Like, this thing is so much within reach for them despite these stumbles, and it's because everybody else around them is stumbling. Like, it's right there. They really are a good week from taking a wild card spot. We said 87 wins. I don't know if it's going to be 87. It might be 85. I just nobody's running away with it. Thank goodness, because it's giving the Royals a chance. Texas got hot, but the thing about Texas is, and people, like, they have so many injuries right now. It's like, you look up and down the lineup, you don't even know who these players are. I mean, even as a Rangers fan, like, I don't even know who a lot of these guys are. I don't know how sustainable theirs is either. Seattle is being typical Seattle, which is crumbling down the stretch. Like, it's right there. The Royals just have to win some games. And, losing two to the Angels blows, quite frankly. But win another one. You've got another winnable series coming up. Like, what do you think is going to happen if they win the next four games? They're going to be in the wild card spot. And they're going to be in.
Absolutely. It's a one game season at this point, but they've got to salvage this series tonight. I want to get the opinion here of our friend Sleeping Beauty, who just arrived. Jacob, I'll let you start because TJ obviously is going to need a decent amount of grief here this morning. He's here. He made it finally. But obviously you had to cover a little bit for us.
TJ, you are a young man. I was up at 3:30 this morning, and I am no longer a young man. What possible excuse is even acceptable?
I really just wanted to give Tommy the opportunity, now that he's officially our boss, to reprimand somebody the first day on the job. So I said, I'm going to sleep in. Who cares?
Just test, dip your toe in the water.
I'm going to test his managerial leadership, see how he handles this, if it's authoritarian, if it's supportive, what is it going to be?
I'm a big believer in the praise in public and criticize in private mentality. So just wait till we go to a commercial break and we'll have a conversation about it. Glad you're here. Jacob, we'll let you go. I appreciate your thoughts on the Royals. I know you're hanging out in the St. Louis airport. Safe travels. Enjoy your trip.
Let's win some money this weekend, fellas. It's big weekend.
It is. Sounds good. There goes Jacob Albrecht. TJ, we've been talking Royals since we got started here. Another winnable game that slipped through their fingertips last night, and just disappointing for them as they're battling for this wild card spot. Again, it wasn't Ryan Burgert. They turned it over to the bullpen, and John Schreiber couldn't get it done. And then the bats were just absolutely silent last night.
Yeah, Jacob said it best as I was driving in here, is that the fact that nobody wants this third wild card spot, and it's not just the Royals, it's everybody. You think, just as a fair weather fan that I've kind of turned into being during, as football season gets bigger and bigger, you watch the Royals and it's like, oh, they lost, they're out of it. And it's like, nope, everybody else lost again. Like, nobody wants to win these games to get into this final spot. So it's crazy to say that they're not dead in the water yet after they're dropping games that they need to be winning. But it's not over yet. They still got a chance. Last night stings. The Angel series is one that you probably, kind of need to take a little bit. And last night was one that you definitely needed to win. It hurts that John Schreiber lost it that way. It hurts worse. I heard you talking about Cags, 110-mile-an-hour lineout. He's officially back in the majors. He only does that in the big league level. So it's a punch in the gut for sure.
It absolutely is. And you mentioned, and Jacob mentioned too, how nobody wants to win this third wild card spot. I think on the flip side of that, with these losses, the Royals are bringing in additional teams into the mix that, as recently as a week ago or a few days ago, these other teams were far out of it as well. We're talking not only the Rangers, but the Rays are now tied with the Royals. The Guardians are just a half game back of the Royals and only three back of that third wild card spot. So now you've got a more condensed and compressed race here where it's not just the Royals chasing the Mariners. You've got four teams that are now back in the mix for that one final wild card spot. And I think that's honestly the most concerning thing for me, is that it's not just a two-team race now. It's more like a five-team race for one final wild card spot.
Yeah, when you get into that point, baseball is a lot about luck and who's hot at the right time. And whenever you have basically five teams in the fold of, you need to be the hot team and everybody else needs to get cold a little bit, it's going to take a bit more. So the Royals are going to have to go on another one of their crazy stretches. They've had two this year, so it's not out of the ordinary to do, but what do they have coming up? They host the Twins, go to the Guardians, then it's Phillies, and then the Mariners. So, that's a tough stretch. There's not many easy games you're going to find there. That's what hurts the worst about losing a series to the Angels. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and there are definitely some concerning question marks with the rotation. And this has been going on for quite a while, but Matt Quatrero mentioned after the game that Seth Lugo was dealing with some lower back tightness. We're getting towards the end of the season where it's a grind and it's grueling, and Lugo hasn't been right ever since he signed that extension. And it looks like he's going to have his start at bare minimum pushed back. I don't know if it's going to be skipped altogether, but pushed back bare minimum. Noah Cameron will get the start tonight in the game against Kyle Hendricks. And then you've got Michael Wacha in the opening game against the Twins. It does sound like potentially Lugo could go on Saturday night against the Twins, but it is concerning when you look at that and like, man, like what are they going to do with this rotation? They already had Cameron skip a start last weekend, and they had Stephen Kolick pitch, and he pitched pretty well. But they're just trying to piecemeal together a rotation and get them to the end of the season.
It is crazy compared to what we were talking about in March of how good this rotation was and how it was the strength of this team and everything. And it still basically kind of is, honestly. But the fact of you don't have Bubic out there. You don't have Reagans out there. If Lugo's hurt, you're going to lose him as well. It's a completely different team than what we saw at the beginning of the season. It's baseball. I understand. It's September. It's a different season of the year, basically. So, yeah, losing Lugo hurts, but Lugo, the way that he's pitched since he signed the extension, you know, there's something that's got to give. So, you might feel better that he might have been hurt this whole time or something. Maybe he signed his extension with a 200-pound pin and hurt picking it up or something like that. That might make you feel better that the fact that there is something there to get this taken care of is if they do make this playoff push, Lugo is a guy that you're absolutely going to need for that wild card series. Cause he's a guy that you can trust, and he showed all of the first half of the season, all of last year, what he can do.
At the bare minimum, he won't pitch tonight. It may be this weekend. They may skip his start altogether. We don't have official starting pitchers for Saturday's game. It does look like Cameron tonight, Wacha on Friday. Michael Lorenzen is listed as the starting pitcher on the Sunday finale against the Twins. But you've got to salvage this series tonight against the Angels. It's a 6:40 first pitch at Kauffman Stadium, and you'll be able to listen to all the coverage over on KNSS AM 1330 tonight. Is where we will have the game. Let's shift gears here, TJ, with the final few minutes we have in this segment. It's opening night of the NFL. Cowboys and Eagles tonight. Chiefs, Chargers tomorrow night from Brazil. We'll talk to our betting insider, PJ Glasser, in our next hour for his favorite bets of the weekend, not just in the NFL, but also in college football also. So we'll get into more of the betting in our next hour. But top-level view, TJ, it's a big matchup tonight, divisional foes between the Cowboys and the Eagles. Of course, the Cowboys are always in the news, but especially in the news with the Micah Parsons trade last week. And the Eagles, I feel like I mentioned this yesterday on the show, I almost feel like for a defending champion, the Eagles are almost being slept on a little bit. I know we'll do our picks officially tomorrow. Well, actually, we picked this game last week on Friday.
Yeah.
I feel like the Eagles are going to run all over the Cowboys tonight. That's just my thoughts on that.
I think they are, too. I think the fact that what the Cowboys have done all offseason have been in the news with the Micah Parsons trade, losing Micah Parsons, it can't be good for a locker room morale for the way that situation went down. You think about that. You think about the Eagles and what they do well is going to be just run it down their throats all night long. I don't know. You think about that Cowboys defense of who's going to step up, who's going to take, that position of Mike Parsons to block off those edges. So I'm going to take the Eagles all over in this one. And I think I hope I did. I think I did on the picks last week. We'll see if Paul wrote it down right, I guess. I think it's going to be an awesome game. As a Saquon fantasy owner, I'm very excited to see what he's going to look like this year, because I don't know if you can have another 2,000-yard rushing season, but if there's somebody that can, I still think he's probably the best running back in the league.
You'd have to think that maybe his usage will decline a little bit. I mean, I don't know if that's
like year nine for
him. I don't know if that's sustainable to be able to do that much in back-to-back seasons. Maybe he can. Like you mentioned, if anybody can do it, it'd be Saquon. And so that kicks off the NFL season tonight. We're finally here. After months and months and months of off-season and draft and OTAs, training camps, preseason, all the drama, all the narratives, all the storylines, we actually get meaningful NFL football kicking off tonight with Cowboys and Eagles. I know both the Chiefs and the Chargers landed in Brazil yesterday, getting ready for that matchup tomorrow night. And it sounds like Najee Harris is a full go. He'll be playing. And I mentioned it yesterday on the show. Want to get your quick take on this. And we'll get more into the Chiefs in depth in our next segment. But I really feel like the Chargers, their key to this game is to lean heavy on Harris and Omarion Hampton to establish the run the ball. My biggest question mark with this Chiefs defense is their defensive line outside of Chris Jones. And so I feel like, in my mind, that's the recipe for success for Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, you could make the argument either way, I feel like, too. I think if you look at the defensive line, like you said, then you can look at the secondary as the fact of they had like three guys in their secondary get hurt. Justin Reed's not there this year. Nobody knows what that's going to really look like except for the 10 snaps that we got of it in the preseason. So that's kind of my biggest question mark about the Chiefs defense there. So I want your take on this before we go to the next thing. Do you notice, I was listening to the SV Pod last night, the Scott Van Pelt podcast. They pointed out there's like 15 of the 16, not that's an exaggeration, 10 of the 16 games are all divisional games to open the year this year.
Really?
Cowboys, Eagles, Chiefs, Chargers, Bucks, Falcons, like up and down the list. What's your take on, this Chiefs Chargers game could be huge. It's going to be a tight race. What's your take on this being on a Friday in week one?
Well, I don't love that it's on a Friday in week one. Correct me if I'm wrong. We get into high school football tomorrow, right? So, way. I mean, I don't love that. I don't love when you've got college football or NFL stepping on the toes of local high school games. So I don't love that for that reason. But I do like the added meaningfulness of a lot of these divisional matchups. I think that that's important to kick off the season in that way and set the tone for the way a division is going to go.
Yeah, it's the same argument you can make for the K-State-Iowa State argument of, do you want to do this before you know who you are as a team? Nobody knows what this is going to look like on the field. So,
but at least in the NFL, you have preseason. You know, like K-State-Iowa State, true. They're just going out and like they've not played a single game and they're going overseas to play. So,
good point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it definitely makes things more impactful when you're looking at those matchups. The final NFL storyline, and like I mentioned, we'll get more into the Chiefs-Chargers in our next segment. The final NFL storyline that came out late last night, I don't know if you saw this, you probably were asleep. Kind of interesting, some local ties here. The Koch family, they're buying a stake in the New York Giants. $10 billion valuation. So this is according to ESPN. It came out last night. The Koch family has reportedly agreed to purchase a 10% stake in the New York Giants. Bloomberg first reported it. It's pending approval by league owners in October. This is the crazy thing. This would surpass the North American professional record of just over $6 billion that Josh Harris's group paid to buy the Commanders from former owner Dan Snyder in 2023. Julia Koch, the widow of David Koch, she's part of it. So the family is part of it. So I guess that they are part owners right now of the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Liberty, which I didn't realize that. But apparently they are buying a stake in the New York Giants, a little bit of a local tie here with the Koch family getting more into sports ownership.
Interesting. That throws the new tie into the Giants-Chiefs matchup in week three or whatever that one is. That's interesting a lot. You talk about all the people that get into this, between Tom Brady owning half of the team or whatever and everything like that. So it's a completely different game when you get up to that upper management level, and a bunch of different people are getting in. You see the Clippers storyline that came out yesterday? Nobody knows what's going
on
about that.
That's wild. We didn't even have a chance to talk about it on the program yesterday about how allegedly the Clippers circumvented the salary cap by giving Kawhi Leonard a bogus endorsement deal or something that didn't even exist.
From
a tree company that he didn't do anything with, and that was how they were able to get around the salary cap.
Nuts.
That's crazy. There's a lot with that, and I'm sure that happens a lot more often than maybe what people know. It is the first day of the NFL. It's a big day. We're excited. We're celebrating. We're finally here. We're ready to rock and roll. Cowboys, Eagles tonight, but the matchup we're really following, obviously. Chiefs and Chargers in Sao Paulo, Brazil tonight. The big storyline that came out yesterday, TJ, in this game, Jalen Royals did not travel with the team. He is officially out, been dealing with that knee injury basically throughout the majority of preseason. It's probably the right thing to do to hold him out. We found out and realized, I didn't realize until we looked it up the other day on the show, that it's like a 12-hour flight from Kansas City to Sao Paulo.
I didn't know that either.
Probably the right thing to do to not have the rookie with the knee issue sitting on a plane for 12 hours and then being in a different country, not playing, and then turning around and flying 12 hours back. So he did not go with the team on this trip. And then you add that in with the Rashee Rice suspension. All of a sudden, that really deep wide receiver room isn't quite as deep in week one.
Yeah, it killed me whenever I read that, by the way. It said, Jalen Royals will not be coming with us to Brazil. And it's like, man, imagine having knee tendonitis. Like, yeah, sorry, you can't go to Sao Paulo. Like, oh, okay, I'll hang out in Overland Park, I guess. The wide receiver room is going to be the biggest thing to watch in this week one. We were talking about it. Who's the wide receiver two? Is it Juju? Like, we have no idea who it's going to be.
I guess Hollywood, maybe? I don't know. I mean, you know, like, Worthy, I'm glad that Worthy was able to come along the way that he did late in the season and throughout the playoffs. I think assuming he's 100% healthy, you've got to think it's Hollywood.
Yeah, that was the kind of the question as we were leading into it, talking for, you know, fantasy football purposes, is the fact of, like, Hollywood's kind of questionable. He's been banged up all offseason as well. It looks like he's going to go now, but it's just like, if he doesn't go, like, who's behind Juju? Like, who's behind him? Juju? Who's behind Juju? What's his name? Thornton. New roster.
Max's favorite player of all time, Thornton. I think you've got to at least put the possibility in your head that you're going to see some reps from Tyquan Thornton.
You will.
You're going to see some reps probably from Nico Remigio. I know they love him on special teams, and that's why he made the team, is to be that return guy. But it's a lot more thin now. You're down two receivers before you've even played a game.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting on what they do, because they've kind of made it vocal that they really want to get back to a deep passing game of what Mahomes was really good at a couple of years ago. They've had to kind of go away from a little bit. They don't have receivers these first couple of weeks, especially until Royals gets healthy. It's still to see what that's going to look like. And then it's the fact of, if they don't have the receiver core that can go out and compete at the level they want to, are they going to run the ball? The Chiefs don't run the football. What is Isaiah Pacheco going to look like after just broke his leg a year ago? What's a 33-year-old Kareem Hunt look like, however old he is at this point? A lot of questions are going to be answered of who this Chiefs team is going to be. We've seen, a different Chiefs team every single year on the offense since the three-peat started, I would say. Maybe back to Super Bowl 54.
I've been a huge believer throughout the entire offseason, basically going all the way back to the, end of the season last year and the Super Bowl loss and all of that, that for me, offensively for Kansas City, it's less about the personnel and it's more about the scheme. It's more about the play calling. It's more about the play design and all of that. And of course, even outside of the wide receivers, the biggest story is Josh Simmons. The biggest story is having an anchor on the left side of your line. If they can buy, and it looks like they'll be able to, if they can buy Patrick Mahomes even an additional second or two in the pocket on basically every play, then that should help make the play calling that much better. You don't have to worry about him running for his life and trying to complete throws on the run quite as much, you would think. And so, for me, it's even less about the personnel. Because by and large, these are the pass catchers that we had a season ago, and they went to the Super Bowl. It was Worthy, it was Brown in the playoffs, it was Smith-Schuster, it was Travis Kelce. You know, it was those guys. That's who they're going to have again this time around. The difference is the line play, and if you can give Patrick Mahomes more time in the pocket to complete those downfield passes, they should theoretically have more success offensively.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think that Andy Reid offense was designed to run the way that it did last year. I think that they probably wanted to be more aggressive on offense. And I think that I remember it, the Mahomes to Worthy pass in LA, I believe. Actually, I think it was the one in the Super Bowl, was the longest pass of the year. I think he only had two passes over 50 yards all season long, basically. And I don't think that was by design. I think that you don't have time to throw a 50-yard pass whenever you have to scramble. You have to get the check down. You have to get the ball out of there because he was getting rushed every single snap last year. So that's the other question. The big thing that you want to watch is there's a ton of hype around Josh Simmons, and everybody says he should have been a top 15 pick if he was healthy heading into the draft. And did the Chiefs really pull one off and get this guy that's going to help them save the offense? So a lot of eyes are going to be on him. I imagine the Chargers are probably going to target that side of the line, because I don't know who we know the left guard. Is it going to be Kingsley at left guard?
I think it's going to be Kingsley. And I think the other big point on that is, let's say it is Kingsley. I think it probably is. You can, if you're Josh Simmons and you are a solid left tackle, in theory, you can help compensate for not great left guard play. Yep. I think we all kind of know what we're going to get in Kingsley Suamataia. It might be serviceable at best, and the worst case scenario is it's bad. But you can have Josh Simmons help compensate for that a little bit on the end of the line. It doesn't really work the other way around. We saw that a season ago. You know, Joe Tooney, who is a great left guard, can't really help compensate for bad left tackle play. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of flip-flop that a little bit, at least in my mind. So even if Kingsley is not ideal, and he probably won't be, if you've got an anchor there on the end of the line with Josh Simmons, that should help that overall side of the line.
Yeah, that's something I'm really excited to see. It's going to be basically reshaped. I think that the fact is that they've got Jalen Moore in their back pocket as well. Jalen Moore can be the swing tackle to come in. If things aren't going well, you can shift guys around. You can do a bunch of stuff. They already are with Kingsley playing left guard. So going to be interesting to see how they handle all that. It just has to be better than it was a year ago, basically.
What was your take on, we haven't talked to you since this all happened, what was your take on the Chiefs trading for Derek Nnadi after they let him walk in free agency just a few months ago? They cut Mike Pinnell.
Yeah.
They chose, this is the crazy thing, they chose Mike Pinnell over Derek Nnadi when the offseason started. They let Nnadi walk, and then they traded a draft pick to bring Nnadi back and cut Mike Pinnell.
Yeah.
I love Brett Veach. I think he's phenomenal. To me, that seems like a misstep in my mind.
Yeah, I was really surprised just in the sheer fact of cutting Mike Pinnell. Mike Pinnell looked like he was going to be a starting defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Like, he had a great year last year in the playoffs. He always does for some reason in the playoffs. So I was surprised. I thought it was going to be, whenever I saw that, it was going to be like a Robert Tonyan situation whenever they let him walk and he doesn't have to clear waivers to bring him right back. And they didn't bring him right back. They let him walk away. So the Nnadi situation, I definitely don't hate trading for Derek Nnadi. It does feel like he wasn't going to make the Jets team. So it felt like they probably could have just saved that pick swap, gotten him off of waivers, because I don't know what the market would be for Derek Nnadi, but I guess that's your way of cutting the line if he did have to go through waivers to go get him. So I don't know. I don't hate it bringing Nnadi back, but it seemed like that was something they were going to do on top of bringing Pinnell back just to help with a kind of depleted defense a little bit. So
here's an idea. Maybe you don't let him walk in free agency and you re-sign him in March.
Yeah.
As opposed to giving up a draft pick to bring him back. That seemed a little weird to me when that whole situation went down. And honestly, that feeds into why I think if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm running the football as much as I can. Because, I mean, again, we know Chris Jones is a unicorn, but there are question marks on that defensive line. Nnadi, well, I know he's got experience with the team, but he's only been back with the team for like a week, and all of a sudden they're going to Brazil. They signed Jerry Tillery, who really has been a non-impact guy throughout the offseason and training camp and preseason. They like Omar Norman a lot, but I haven't heard, I know he's been banged up, I haven't heard much from him over the last couple of weeks. So in my mind, on that line, there are more questions than answers.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I didn't really thought about that part of it. You know, you think about the ends are going to be pretty solid with Carl Loftus and Aminahue on the other side.
Isn't that Omarion Hampton's game is like run between the tackles and, you know, try to do what he, you know, can up the gut? I think that that's where the Chargers, at the very bare minimum, that's where the Chargers can establish the pass game. I don't think if you're Jim Harbaugh, I don't think that the key to success is to just let Justin Herbert go sling it from the beginning.
Yeah.
I think you have to establish the run to set up the pass in this game. I know that sounds really simple, but especially knowing where the question marks are defensively with this Kansas City team, I would think if you can establish that run up the gut with Omarion Hampton, he can have a good debut in the NFL, then that could soften up the already questionable Chiefs defense.
Yeah. Before we dig deeper into this, I guess the question that we're asking here is, you know, is this something the Chargers are going to, you know, pull away from the Chiefs? Or what's your take on this Chargers team? I think they're the second best odds, third best odds to win the AFC West, it looks like. You know, do you think that they're a team that actually can compete for this?
No, I don't. I've got them in the division. I think that they will challenge the Broncos for second. But we did our picks last week. I've got Chiefs winning the division, obviously, because you can't pick against them after nine straight.
Yeah.
Broncos, I think, will take another step forward, and I think they're a playoff team for sure. I believe I have the Chargers making the playoffs as a wild card, but I think they'll be probably a game behind the Broncos. So, I think it's ultimately going to be a better division this year from top to bottom. I think the Raiders will be better with Pete Carroll and Geno Smith. They're not going to only win four-ish games this season. But no, I don't have the Chargers winning the division.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Do you feel like this team got better? That was kind of the question that brought up. The Chargers.
The Chargers.
Because it's like, what did they do? They lost Bosa. They lost Christian Fulton.
Right.
Who did they bring in? They brought in Omarion Hampton, who's going to help a lot. But
I mean, they brought back Keenan Allen, which, you know, I know Jacob's higher on than I am. I mean, he's 34 years old or whatever. And I think historically, a second stint with a team usually doesn't work as well when you bring him back after he's been there for a long time. And on top of that, I know that McConkey can play anywhere on the field, but McConkey basically played Keenan Allen's position his rookie season. Yep. So you're going to have to shift somebody around in that offense. No, I don't think that they ultimately got better. It's the Harbaugh effect. I like Jim Harbaugh. So, I don't think they're going to be a bad team. I think the other detriment to them, obviously, they've got a pretty solid offensive line, but when you lose Slater for the entire season, that's a big loss for your offensive line. They'll still be probably a solid line overall from top to bottom, but that's a major, major, major loss for this team.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome game on Friday. I remember I was at the Sunday night game whenever Matthew Wright doinked it in for the division. I was at that Chargers game, and I'm just watching. I mean, Herbert drove up and down the field in that second half. They were lucky to get away with the win there. So, they're a good team. The Chiefs have had their number, I think, for the past 5 years, basically, yeah. The entire Mahomes and Herbert tenure. So, I don't know. I think that just for that sheer point, it's going to be a weird one, and it's probably going to be Chiefs win by one and don't cover the way that the Chiefs love to do. So, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. And we're going to have to find out. We were talking in the newsroom yesterday. It's the first Catch at Kansas Friday.
Yeah.
Are we going to have the phones open with the YouTube app while we're shooting games across the state? That's probably yes.
There you go. I made a declaration the other day on the show that I think Jacob had a heart attack when I said it. I said that this was the season that Justin Herbert has to prove that he's not the second coming of Trevor Lawrence. And Jacob's like, oh, he's so much better than Trevor Lawrence. And he might be, but they're not winning playoff games. They're not in a situation to really challenge. And maybe a better comparison. And then I amended it by saying Justin Herbert could be the second coming of Dan Marino. You know, just puts up a ton of offensive stats, but is never able to win the big one. And I think we're getting to that point now with Justin Herbert where they've got to prove something for sure. We'll get more into that game, and we'll pick it tomorrow on the program in our Friday football picks. We've got a jam-packed next hour of the program. On the other side, our buddy Jay Delling is going to be joining us right at 8 o'clock to talk about the Heritage Classic out at Rolling Hills Country Club, which tees off today. We'll talk to him. PJ Glasser comes up. Tim Fitzgerald joins us. Also, our second hour is full of guests, so don't go away. We'll be doing that on the other side. It's Sports Daily, Tommy Caster and TJ Cleland. We're coming right back. Welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two of Sports Daily on this Thursday. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland in for Jacob Albrock today. Max Power producing the program. We've got a busy, jam-packed second hour on the program. In our next segment, our betting insider PJ Glasser will join us to give us best bets on NFL Week 1, on the college football slate, everything going on in that world. We'll talk to him in our next segment. Our K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald will join us as well from GoPowerCat.com a little bit later on in the program. That's all What's on Tap. What's on Tap is brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company with WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all WBC brew pubs. Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. We're joined now on the program by our buddy Jay Delling. Heritage Classic, Jay, it kicks off today. We're looking forward to it. It's golf time in Wichita. The weather is beautiful after we had another round of storms move through. It kind of seemed like deja vu from the Wichita Open a couple of months ago, but we were able to get through it all, and we've got golf going on. Thanks for joining us today, Jay.
Hey, pleasure. Okay, so let's talk about the elephant in the room here.
Yeah.
All right, Jacob's not with us.
He's not.
And the reason is he's celebrating his bronze medal victory yesterday at the Heritage Classic Pro-Am. Him, Michael Schwanke, and the rest of their team took third place, so they won the bronze medal.
Would you pair him with Scottie Scheffler or something?
Yeah, he didn't tell me that. That's crazy.
I mean, he's a big timer now.
Yeah, I think he might be a little bit too.
He didn't have time for us at 8 o'clock.
I bet those 180 yard drives that he hits were just tearing up the fairways.
Hey, it might be 180, but it's right down the middle every single time. He's modest too. He didn't even tell me that he came in third place. That's pretty exciting. That's pretty great.
We had a great day yesterday for the Pro-Am, and you mentioned the weather this week. It's going to be great out here all week. It's going to be mid to high 70s for the rest of the week. The ladies just started teeing off about 15 minutes ago, and everybody's just so excited. There's so much excitement surrounding the tournament this year. A lot of new things. Bigger and better. We've got more players in the field. We've got a field of 135 women vying for $20,000 the winner takes away at the end of the weekend. Only the points to
I think we're
their golf journey. And then big elephant in the room is the GOAT of women's golf is going to be the birthplace of the LPGA, Rolling Hills Country Club, right here where I sit and stand on Sunday. So everybody's excited about that.
Yeah, that's pretty great, Jay. And we, I think we cut out a little bit on there. So obviously, I know that, you know, you mentioned the field is extremely strong. We know that we've got, you know, Annika Sorenstam coming in on Sunday, all of that to celebrate the winner. It seems like every year that goes by, this tournament gets bigger and better every single time. And I know that you guys have a lot of really special things planned for spectators when they come out and enjoy the golf this weekend.
Yeah, it's the first time we've entered into the hospitality chalet, right? So much like you see at the Wichita Open, you're going to see this on the 18th green surrounding that green. And so those of you familiar with Rolling Hills Country Club, we have flipped the nines. So typically for the members, number nine is a really super beautiful, pretty, challenging par three. It is now number 18. So we've built the chalet around the 18th green. So great place to watch golf from there. The beauty of this golf tournament is admission is free. Admission is free. You can park at Buffalo Park on North Mays Road. And we'll have shuttles to bring you to the golf course to watch the Stars of Tomorrow. And people ask me, you know, what, tell me about this tour. What about this tour is special? What's the significance of this tour in the overall scheme of things? Well, this is the fourth playing of the Heritage Classic. So the first two winners of the Heritage Classic, Mariel Galdiano back in 2022 and Gurleen Kaur back in 2023, are playing on the LPGA Tour this year. Last year's winner, Haley Cooper, is 10th on the points race on the Epson Tour, which is the equivalent tour in men's the 15th LPGA card. So at the end of this year, first three winners are going to be on the LPGA Tour. That's significant. That's how this tour contributes to the world of women's golf.
Jay, you know, we talk about whenever it's Wichita Open week about the guys that are, you know, you see play in the NCAA level and everything like that that have kind of worked their way to the Corn Ferry Tour. This is kind of the one, I mean, most of these girls were playing collegiate golf somewhere like last year. Like, this is like their first step into professional golf. You know, just I mean, these are going to be like 22-year-olds basically. Like, there's a lot of young girls that are on, young women that are on this stage ready to make their debut. Is that right?
Absolutely. Haley Cooper, last year, she was only a professional for about 3 months before she won the Heritage Classic last year. Just the talent pool in golf in general, but the women is unbelievable. And to your point, Tej, it you know, these girls are professional ready when they come out of college. That's how good the college game, good these young ladies are. I mean, they're athletes too. You walk around and look, if I'm in a bar fight, I'd want some of these gals with me. I mean, they're lean, they're strong. I played in the Pro-Am yesterday with Megan Oslin, who is third on the points list, and I've no doubt she's going to be on the LPGA Tour in the next year or two. And I'm no short hitter. And her and I were very similar in distance on par fours and par fives. And I'm going, holy cow. And this is a, you know, she's probably 5'7", weighs all of about 125 pounds. And she just kills it. And every one of these players are just like that. They're just amazing to watch.
I'm looking at the Storm Team 12 app right now, Jay. Today's high 80, tomorrow 71. 74 on Saturday, 75 on Sunday. It's a far cry from the Heritage Classic a year ago. I remember wasn't it like 105? It was so hot.
Yeah, ask TJ.
Oh, we streamed. We were so streaming holes back for the 12 News Connected desk. Brandon was walking around with a backpack and a camera for 3 hours watching golf.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was like overheating. It was so hot out there. This doesn't feel like we're covering golf. We're covering football, Jay.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
I know. Exactly. The fall is in the air. Whew. You know, football, fall golf doesn't get any better.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. We will talk more with Jay tomorrow on the program, and you know, make sure that we get people, you know, all the information about the leaderboard and about all of that. Tomorrow we'll have one day of play in the books out at the Heritage Classic. So Jay, we'll bring you back in tomorrow, same time, to talk about updates on the leaderboard, how the tournament is going, how the course is playing, and all of that. But real quick, one final note, and you mentioned this before, but I don't want to gloss over it for listeners out there. The Heritage Classic is free for people to come out and check out. So if you're looking for something fun to do over the next 4 days that isn't going to break the bank, go on out to Rolling Hills Country Club. It's not going to cost you a dime.
Yeah, it's easy to walk around. Beautiful golf course. It's in great shape this year. And so, yeah, come on out and join us.
All right, sounds great. We'll talk to Jay again tomorrow, same time on the program, to give us an update on the leaderboard and everything going on at the Heritage Classic. Jay, we appreciate your time.
All right, boys, have a good day.
All right, there goes Jay Delling, Heritage Classic, teeing off today out at Rolling Hills Country Club, which, by the way, TJ, is one of my favorite golf courses in the metro. It's so much fun to play, and it's great that, obviously, that's the birthplace of the LPGA, and we'll get a chance to see future stars playing in this tournament again this weekend. Before we go to break, speaking of golf, our thanks to Crestview Country Club, proud supporters of this program, proud partners of ours. I'm going to be playing a little bit of golf this weekend. It's the member-member golf tournament out at Crestview, so I'm going to be competing in that. Hopefully, my game can show up for me. That'd be ideal for sure. But we appreciate their support of the program, and you know, just a great time to get out there. Jay was talking about fall golf. It's a great time to call up Crestview Country Club and check out and see everything that they've got going on for you. It's a great time to join out there. So we appreciate their support of the program. Also, our thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee. I know TJ's needing that this morning, knowing that he's a little bit tired this morning. So we appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up and caffeinated here on the program. Our jam-packed second hour of the program rolls on the other side of this break. PJ Glasser, our betting insider, will join us. What is he like as far as bets are concerned in both NFL and college football as we get ready for the first official week of NFL football kicking off tonight with the Cowboys and the Eagles, Chiefs and the Chargers tomorrow? It's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll talk to PJ on the other side of the break as we do that. Also want to remind you all that tonight we've got the Chris Kleiman radio show. That's going to be an interesting one, talking Wildcat football right here on KFH tonight at 5 o'clock. You can listen right here on 97.5 and 1240 KFH or online at kfhradio.com. You can download the free Odyssey app and search for KFH. I would imagine it'll be an interesting show tonight, the Chris Kleiman radio show. We'll talk K-State a little bit later on this hour with our buddy Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com. PJ Glasser talking best bets of the week on the other side. It's Sports Daily. Tommy Caster and TJ Cleland coming right back.
Let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on KFH. Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland joining us, and our buddy PJ Glasser, our betting insider, joining us here on the program. I love that. Thank you, Max. You better, you bet. I love that. It's good stuff. PJ, welcome into the program, my friend. I got to tell you, I hope that nobody tailed me over the weekend because I had a horrible betting weekend. And I think it was because I went on the over in a lot of the college football games, and it just seemed like under was the play. You're talking Texas, Ohio State, the under hit on that. I mean, there were so many unders that played. I had a bad weekend. I think you had a better one than I did.
Yeah, I had Ohio State in the big game, which was good. LSU, I did pretty well on some sides, but you're right. The totals, it was definitely an under weekend. I think of all the college football games, I want to say over 60% of them went under. And that was really the big theme, Tommy, of the weekend. We had all these marquee matchups, but a lot of these quarterbacks were either making their first start, they were making their first true road start. And, you know, when you're going up against good teams with talented players and good coaches and hostile environments, you tend to get some of the games and the scores that we saw. So I wouldn't expect it to be like that every week. I think as we go on, these quarterbacks get more experience. We'll see some higher scoring games. But it might be another theme this weekend, you know, with maybe some conference games starting for certain teams. We have some rivalry games. Michigan-Oklahoma is the big one. You have a true freshman from Michigan going on the road. So I think that maybe we could see some unders over the next couple weeks in college football as well.
We're going to get into some of the big matchups in college football a little bit later on in this segment, but we got to start NFL with, you know, the week one of the NFL season getting underway tonight. Cowboys and Eagles, the first matchup. Cowboys go on the road as 8.5-point dogs. There's been obviously so much drama with this team over the last few months and culminating last week with the Micah Parsons trade. I mentioned this a little bit earlier on in the show to TJ. I feel like for defending champions, the Eagles are kind of being slept on a little bit. What do you like in this game?
I think I like the Cowboys team total over at 19.5. That's probably the way that I would look. I could see them maybe scoring some points in garbage time. Now that the spread is at 8.5, if I had to make a play, I'd probably lean Dallas, but I don't feel great about it because it just feels like Philly's going to be in control. There's not going to be much Dallas can do to stop their run game. But I kind of look at the Cowboys this year, and I think they could be the NFC version of what the Bengals are. You know, a team with a great offense that scores a lot of points. It's not going to be able to stop many people. And Dak tends to play well in divisional games. He now has two good receivers in Lamb and Pickens, and they don't have much of a run game. So I know Philly's defense is really good. Their secondary is terrific. They're a tough team to throw the ball on. But I think Dallas is going to be able to score in this game. So instead of taking the side and betting the 8.5, I just like the Dallas team total over 19.5.
PJ, talking about props in this first one, you know, just before you joined, we were talking about Saquon Barkley, about, you know, what he did a season ago. It was one of the best seasons by a running back ever, basically. You know, speaking on tonight and just the season as a whole, is he able to take on that much volume, do you think? Are you going to look at Saquon props?
You know, I think Saquon's going to have another incredible season if he could stay healthy. Obviously, that's usually the big key with him. The offensive line's still really, really good. What I'm looking with Saquon to do is to bet him to score the first touchdown in the game tonight at plus 375. With the way that the season went, you know, last year and him having a record-breaking year, I think he's going to start the season off again this year, fine in the end zone. It reminds me of Alex Ovechkin, guys, in hockey when he broke Gretzky's record. And then who was the first guy for the Caps to score a goal in the postseason? Of course it was. It was Ovechkin because it was just his season. So I think Barkley, with the year that he had, he starts off this season fine in the end zone. So I like that at plus 375. If you want to bet like a Saquon Philly, Saquon anytime touchdown Philly money line, get yourself close to plus money. I think that's not a bad option as well. And then for a guy with Dallas that I would look at, I kind of think this is going to be a Jake Ferguson type game. So him anytime touchdown, him over receiving yards. You have Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. You have good corners on the outside for Philly. The middle of the field is where teams try to attack the Eagles if they can. So I think this could be a Ferguson game. So I like him for Dallas, but Saquon, first touchdown. TJ, that's how I'd attack Barkley tonight.
Let's move on to the Friday night game in Brazil, Chiefs and Chargers. It's a field goal game right now. You know, Chiefs are 3-point favorites right now in this game. It's always interesting when you've got an international game, especially to kick off the season, divisional matchup, all of that. I feel like because of those kind of unknowns, it makes it more difficult to handicap. Is there anything in this game that you like or that you feel like stands out to you?
So the first thing would probably be the under 46.5 in this game. Normally in these NFL international games, the unders tend to be the play. We tend to get low scoring games. So, and with this being a divisional matchup, the two teams knowing each other really well, I think 46.5 can be a play. If we get a 3.5 with the Chargers, I'll be on the Chargers at +3.5. I think 3.5 would be a good bet. As of right now at the flat 3, I probably just lean Chiefs money line, maybe look to parlay them with something else on the board. But guys, Jim Harbaugh is a perfect 5-0 against the spread in week 1 as a head coach. So he has his teams ready. Now when you have a neutral site game against the best coach in the NFL and the best quarterback in the NFL, that's why I want the hook in what should be a close game. So it's really all number dependent for me. I think if for people out there who are doing like their NFL, you know, pigskin pools and you can get a 3.5 with the Chargers, I would take them in that game. If you get 2.5 with the Chiefs, I'd take Kansas City. It's really all about the number. I think the Chiefs win the game, so the money line would be the safest play. But if we get that hook with LA, I would look to back them plus the points.
I'll ask you about props in this one, PJ. You know, this Chiefs offense that we talk about so much here locally, nobody knows what it's really going to look like. There's no Rashee Rice on the field. Jalen Royals didn't get on the plane to go with him to Brazil because of a knee injury. You know, Hollywood Brown was shaken up all offseason a little bit. Travis Kelce's 50 years old now. Who do you like on this offense that you might look at?
I like Kelce. As you guys know, he always torches the Chargers, it feels like, always. And game one, when he's fresh, ready to go, had a great offseason. He's an engaged man. I think this is going to be his last season, and I think he's going to start it off well. So for Kelce, a guy, again, he lights up L.A., and this is always a bad matchup for them. So I think Kelce over 51.5 is a good bet. And you guys, I'm a big fan of Amarion Hampton this season. I think he wins Offensive Rookie of the Year. I don't think we're going to see many games where we get him at 47.5. When Jim Harbaugh is your head coach, Greg Roman is your OC, and you don't have many receiving weapons, you're going to run the football. That's why they drafted him, and it was for games like this. So Hampton over rushing yards, Kelce over receiving yards, the two props I would look at.
I was going to ask you about Hampton. I've said, you know, for the last few days that I feel like the way that the Chargers can win this game is to run the ball heavy up the middle. And there are questions with the Chiefs defensive line. And if Amarion Hampton can be that guy between the tackles, that could be a recipe for success for the Chargers. One guy that we really haven't talked a whole lot about in this matchup over the last few minutes is Patrick Mahomes. And we know that his offensive stats a season ago were relatively pedestrian compared to what we had seen early in his career. That clearly is not the way that Andy Reid wants to run this offense. And so not only is it personnel, not only are there, you know, changes personnel-wise and on the offensive line for Kansas City, but probably play calling as well. It sounds like they're going to want to try to take more shots downfield. Do you feel like there's a play with Mahomes?
There could be. I don't know if I'm going to bet anything with Pat in this game, prop-wise specific. I think maybe like longest completion could be a good look. Maybe you could just look at the over completions as well. You know, in a game like this, when it's a divisional matchup, first game of the season, Mahomes tends to like to scramble as well. So maybe look at his rushing yards is always a fun bet as well. I'm a big fan of Mahomes this season. I think he's going to win MVP for all the things that you said, Tommy. I think year two are worthy. Kelce looks better. Hollywood, first full year of him. And Rice is going to come back at some point. And with the way that they've been the last 2 years in the regular season, how they looked against Philly in the Super Bowl, I think they, and now with the division, I mean, people are picking Denver and the Chargers to win this division. You're getting the Chiefs at like -118, -120 to win the AFC West. So the perception right now is that Kansas City is not going to be a good regular season team. It looks like they're beatable. Their offense hasn't been world beaters like it was at the start of the Mahomes-Reed era. So I think they're going to put up big offensive numbers this season, maybe not necessarily in this game, but long-term, I'm big on Mahomes and the Chiefs offense this year.
PJ, I'll switch us over to college for now. You know, you talked about the Bryce Underwood going to Norman, Oklahoma. Michigan, Oklahoma, number 15 versus number 18. I just looked at it. I didn't know that Oklahoma was favored by 5.5 points in this one. I would have figured it was going to be Michigan narrowly. What do you think of this one? Did you watch any of Michigan this past week? What do you think of them?
I did. They played New Mexico, TJ. They were 35-point favorites. They only won by 17. So it was disappointing that their defense gave up 17 points. New Mexico looked better than I thought they would. I think the bright spot for Michigan was their transfer running back, Justice Haynes from Bama, had 159 yards and 3 touchdowns. He looked really good. Bryce Underwood, super talented. I mean, you can see why that kid was the number one recruit. His arm strength, his dual threat ability is really good. But again, guys, like we saw it with Arch, we saw it with Ty Simpson, we saw it with some of these guys who were making their first start on the road. It's tough to go in these environments with 80, 90,000 people. You're going up against a really good Oklahoma defense. So I think a first half under would be a good look for me, you know, 22.5, 23.5. I think that's a nice play. We were just talking about Chiefs money line. I think Chiefs money line, Oklahoma money line parlay this week is a really solid bet. I like both of those teams to win the game. I feel confident about that. This line in the summer was Oklahoma minus 2.5. Now it's all the way up to 5.5. I just can't justify a 3-point move off of one game. Like I don't think that those teams look that great or that bad to really justify it. So I think Oklahoma money line would be the way to go and parlay them with the Chiefs at the current number.
Talking to our betting insider, PJ Glasser, here on Sports Daily, the big rivalry that we're following this weekend locally, the border war, Kansas and Missouri. Kansas goes to Columbia to take on the Tigers. Kansas has played Fresno State and Wagner so far this season, so really not a whole lot of big-time competition for the Jayhawks. Right now, the spread, you've got Kansas as 6.5-point road dogs in Columbia at Missouri. It's a hostile environment for them. I'll tell you my feeling on this. If it was more like 7.5 and the Jayhawks could keep it within a touchdown, I would feel more comfortable in that. 6.5 makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that line is at 6.5, because they know if it got to 7, people would come in and they would bet Kansas. So I think that tells you a lot. Kansas, I think, would be my play if I had to make one. I don't think I'm going to bet this game. If I had to, I'd look at the under, though, at 15.5. That was the big theme, as we talked about in week one. I think this game fits the under as well. Missouri, they're going to have one of the best defenses in the SEC this year, but their offense is going to be a work in progress. They lost their top two receivers. They lost their quarterback. So they're trying to figure it out. Yes, Kansas's level of competition hasn't been great, but I do think their defense is pretty solid, and it's going to be a struggle for them to move the ball at times in this game. So I think the under is a good play in this one. Rivalry matchup, two fan bases, as you guys know, that do not like each other. So I'll go under 15.5 between Mizzou and Kansas.
PJ, this may be considered a sicko pick for you, but locally here, Kansas State, they're playing Army. Army just lost to Tarleton State. Kansas State almost just lost to North Dakota. Nobody knows what this game is going to look like. Obviously, the Service Academy unders is what everybody always talks about. The triple option against the K-State defense. Do you have any idea what we're going to see in Manhattan on Saturday?
You know, it was funny, guys, when I saw that these two teams were playing this week, and that was exactly my thought, TJ. It's two teams that you couldn't buy any lower stock on, right? Army just lost to an FCS school. Kansas State should have just lost to an FCS school. And now they're laying 17 against the Service Academy team. That's a lot of points, man. Kleiman has done well against Service Academy teams, and I think the Kansas State defense is built much better for run heavy teams and like pass happy teams. With that being said, though, with the way that Kansas State's looking right now, I don't know if I can lay 17.5. I know Army just lost to Tarleton State, and this spread has actually gone up. So there's professionals that are betting Kansas State, went from 15.5 to 17. It's a stay away. If I had to bet it, I'd probably take Army at the 17 just because that's a lot of points. But, there could be a chance that Kansas State just rolls in this game, because I do think Army's going to have a tough time moving the ball. And because Kansas State played so bad last week, maybe you think, oh, there's a little bit of a letdown going up against military. I think they're going to be locked in, focused, ready to go, make a statement. So I'm interested to see how this game plays out. I'm going to pass it. I'm not betting it. My gut, though, would probably be to take Army, but I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas State wins this game by like four touchdowns.
After all the marquee matchups in college football last week, the only top 25 matchup is one we already talked about, Michigan and Oklahoma. So with the time we have left, going back to, I guess, either NFL, some of the primetime games, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, or really even college as well, what are your favorite plays for the weekend?
Yeah, I'll give you two, guys, one in each. We'll start with college, Ole Miss and Kentucky. There are two plays that I like in that game. I like Kentucky plus the points, and I like the under as well. Lane Kiffin's been terrible in SEC openers. I think he's like at Ole Miss, he's like 1-5 against the spread or something like that. Has not been good. And again, it's the same theme. Young quarterback in Austin Simmons for Ole Miss going on the road in SEC game, making his first start. I think the offense struggles. I think he struggles. Kentucky's got a good defense. I think they have the worst offense in the SEC. Their quarterback, Zach Calzada, threw for 85 yards against Toledo last week. So I mean, what's he going to do against Ole Miss? I don't think there's going to be many points scored in that game. So I like the under, and I like Kentucky. And then in the NFL, you guys, let's see. There are a couple games I like. The one I'll give you is a game probably most people won't be interested in, but I like the Saints plus the 6.5 against the Cardinals. I think the Saints are live in that game. You guys, a couple reasons I like it. The first one, Kyler Murray is a favorite, especially a favorite of 6.5. Kyler, as a favorite in his career, you guys, is only 15-17 straight up. So he does not win when he's a favorite and when things are expected of him. The Superdome is going to be a lot different in week one than it's going to be in week 14. We all expect the Saints to be one of the worst teams in the NFL, but that dome should be rocking. It should be the fans should be in there. They should be making noise. So I think the Saints have a good home field in that first game. And that game, you guys, reminds me a lot of the Bengals-Patriots week one upset that we saw last year, where everybody thought the Patriots were going to be the worst team in the NFL, just like everybody thinks the Saints are going to be the worst team in the NFL. And we saw New England win in week one. And I think we could see the Saints do the same. So I like New Orleans in that game, plus the points at plus 240. I know it's gross betting a Saints game, but I think there's some good value on them in that matchup.
We're underway. We're getting ready for it. NFL week one kicks off tonight, runs through the weekend. We're full into college football at this point as well. So hopefully we've got some good outcomes this weekend as far as betting is concerned. PJ, we appreciate your time as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the football. Talk to you next week.
There goes PJ Glasser, our betting insider.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Just a reminder tonight, we're talking Wildcat football right here on KFH, the Chris Kleiman Radio Show, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. You can listen online at kfhradio.com or download the free Odyssey app and search for KFH. Again, the Chris Kleiman Radio Show tonight at 5 o'clock, talking K-State. And we're talking K-State right now with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, gopowercat.com. Fitz, I would imagine tonight's Chris Kleiman Radio Show will be pretty interesting. A lot to talk about, a lot to get to about the Wildcats' performance over the weekend. Now that we're a few days removed from it, what's your major takeaway from what we saw against North Dakota?
Just not a very motivated team right now. They don't look like they want to compete until the last minute. I do hope that all the people who claim the media doesn't ask hard questions takes this opportunity to ask Chris Kleiman hard questions. But we have probed everything going on here, and I'm actually a little baffled by how this team's playing, and I can't wrap my head around putting in the type of work they do to kind of go through the motions at times. Coach Kleiman pushes back on that, but I'm just not seeing much fire. They might play okay at times, but I'm not seeing the kind of fire I would expect from a Kansas State team.
Fitz, that was kind of the weird part about this North Dakota game, is that the fact that you watch the game and then you think you're going to look at the box score and it's going to say, well, they lost the rushing battle by 150 yards. Like, this is pretty even across the board, which may be worse in itself that you're pretty even across the board with an FCS school that had 5 wins a year ago. Just, is there anything that you can pinpoint from Saturday night that went wrong, or is it just the level of the football team on Saturday night?
Defense sucked.
Yeah.
Flat out. Chris Kleiman called him out for eye discipline, looking at the wrong things and getting beat. And guys, that's a formula for disaster against Army. If your eye discipline's wrong with Army, they're going to be breaking runs left and right. everyone has a job. You got to do your job. And if you consistently do it the right way, you're going to stop this offense. But it requires a lot of discipline. And this defense hasn't shown much discipline so far.
It doesn't get talked about a whole awful lot in, you know, in comparison to quarterback play or defensive efforts or things like that. But special teams can make or break a team. And through the first 2 weeks of the season, K-State special teams has not been very good. Had another turnover in the game on Saturday and just, you know, some issues there. Clearly something that has to be cleaned up moving forward.
I have spoken with former players who are incredibly angry over what's happened to special teams at Kansas State. And I don't think the staff fully, I think they know the history, but they don't fully recognize how ingrained good special teams play is into the football culture at Kansas State. This is literally offensive to fans and former players that they're this bad in special teams. When you got a guy from the NFL that's coaching your special teams, well, I'm going to be blunt. You know me, guys, I'm not too shy. I think we found out why he was available to work college football and not the NFL anymore. He looks like he's got no attention to detail. The blocking's not good. You know, setting aside the fumbles and last year's snapping issues, I just don't see the coverage units or the blocking units doing much effectively. And it's just a matter of time before someone breaks a long run against these special teams.
Fitz, I watched your daily delivery after this past week because I read the headline of it and I just had to listen to what you had to think. And I've been talking to a lot of people about this. I love Avery Johnson. I think he's awesome. You know, obviously we have a relationship going back to when he was high school here in Wichita and everything like that. But, you know, you talked about it. He looks like he's kind of timid back there in the pocket. And then you watch him play and you're like, you know, that wasn't a great throw. Like, I don't know what he was thinking about there. And then he throws for 320 yards when you look at the stats at the end of the game. You can't tell. Is he playing well, or is there more to be seen?
I don't even think he's playing near where he could be. And not all his fault. I mean, I think the coaches have decided what he's good at is we can't use that because you might get hurt. I'm
the totally point of Avery Johnson.
Why. Yeah, you got to let him be himself. And they've gotten into his head now. You saw him run in high school. We saw him run when he's a freshman. Mm-hmm. He goes north and south. Now he goes east and west. Yep. And he's looking for the out of bounds as soon as he can get there. I think they have made him so timid in his decision-making, he's not making good decisions. And now, because of that, they have him standing in a pocket, which you've seen him a long time. That is not Avery Johnson's game. And I don't think he sees well out of the pocket, and he panics when, you know, he feels a little pressure and ends up putting the ball in a bad place when he's got other open receivers, but he doesn't get to his progressions because he's in panic mode.
How much of the, you know, not letting Avery be himself and go out and be let loose has to do with the fact that they don't have Dylan Edwards right now. So there's one star guy who's on the shelf. They don't want it to be two.
It could be. It really could be, and they admit they're limited in what they'd planned to do offensively without Dylan because no one else is at the point of replicating it, and I don't know if anyone on the roster can replicate the unique qualities of Dylan Edwards. So they need to get him back. I think it'll probably be next week or certainly in a few more weeks when they have an off week and then open Big 12 play officially with UCF. But I think it has limited him, and I think the protectionism on Avery right now is a loud statement about their backup quarterbacks. They don't want him on the field. They don't. They don't think they could win with any of them right now. And that's a problem they better solve. They desperately need a big blowout so that they can play some of these guys and put them in game situations and see what they're about.
Fitz, I'm just kind of wondering your thoughts. Not critical one way or another. This is year three of the third different offensive coordinator. Went Klein, Riley, and then Wells this year. You know, what have you seen that's different from Matt Wells that maybe compares to Riley to Klein? You know, is this the same offense that we've seen since Deuce Vaughn was running back, or has things changed in your opinion?
I think this team, they're not calling it as often, but they're really good going deep. And that hasn't always been the MO of K-State's offense. Avery really does have a pretty good arm. Mm-hmm. He underthrew one and got a lucky break on it with a tip ball that ended up being caught. But He was also kind of thrown across his body, and there was some stuff going on there. But they've been really effective getting the ball downfield, and I think they've just mired themselves in a ho-hum short passing game that needs to be opened up a little bit. Get a little more aggressive down the field so you back up those safeties and keep those linebackers in turmoil where they don't know if it's going to be a run or a pass. So they made it pretty easy on defenses so far. They really have.
I guess, you know, if you want to look glass half full, silver lining on all of this, you know, a win's a win. And it's a non-conference game that they played against North Dakota. The game coming up on Saturday is also a non-conference game. The next game is a non-conference game. So there's still an opportunity for this team to gel, come together, turn things around, whatever you want to say, before we get into conference play. But you mentioned it a few minutes ago about the eye discipline defensively. This Army team, while they did lose to an FCS school in Tarleton over the weekend, they're going to provide so many different wrinkles in the way that they run their offense and the triple option and all of that. This has got to be a game that Kansas State, if they haven't looked overly prepared and they look sloppy and they look like they're going through the motions, you absolutely cannot do that against a team like Army.
No, no, that's everything they did against North Dakota defensively is huge trouble against Army. This triple option offense is, they give you the same look over and over, maybe from a little bit different formations, but they're kind of going through the same things, you know, put it in the belly here, pull it out. Do I run? Do I pitch? Do I back up and throw downfield? And just when you think you've got it figured out, they hit you over the top, and this is a better passing quarterback than Army's had in the past. So this could be a challenge, really could be. And we talk about K-State being motivated after losing or almost losing to North Dakota. You can imagine Army's pretty motivated losing at home to Tarleton State. So it will be interesting. And I think this might be the exact kind of game this team needs. A really well-coached, disciplined team that's going to run things in a manner that you have to respond with your own form of discipline and good habits, something the defense hasn't shown so far.
What was the vibe like around the stadium after the game? I mean, obviously the team wins, but I can't imagine that, you know, the fan base was content at all with the way that it played out.
No, I think almost everyone in that stadium realized North Dakota should have won the game. They were the better team throughout that game, and K-State just decided, okay, let's beat K-State on the last possession and went right down the field, and Avery ran the ball. He had 9 yards rushing in the entire game until that last possession when he broke off that long run. So I think people realized they dodged a bullet, and I almost felt bad for the North Dakota fans that they didn't get the win because they had done almost everything right. Plus, there was a drone show, so you had a little eye candy
really
after
cool,
the game.
Really cool drone show at that.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I mean, I didn't realize it was a drone show, so I thought we were under attack.
Army came early.
Yeah, I kind of thought like an alien invasion was, you know, coming in by using the word EMA in the sky. And I was just really frightened for everyone.
Well, they got to do better this weekend. Saturday night, kickoff at 6 o'clock against Army in Manhattan. What do you have going on over at GoPowerCat.com?
10 a.m. on YouTube, the K-State pregame show drops. It'll be up on the side at 11. You can find that. All kinds of stuff going on YouTube. We got a podcast from yesterday. We'll have the Friday walkthrough on, well, Friday. Next week will be on Thursday, so never mind that. But, yeah, we just got tons of coverage, a lot of VIP stuff for our subscribers going on this season. Some really cool stuff that our managing editor, Ryan Gilbert, has come up with.
All right, we'll go check it out online, gopowercat.com. And Fitz, hopefully it's a better outcome. I mean, obviously the outcome they won, but a better showing on Saturday in Manhattan for the Wildcats against Army. And we'll have a breakdown and recap of all of it next week when you join us. We appreciate that.
Okay, boys, great to talk to you.
All right, there goes Tim Fitzgerald. He is the publisher of GoPowerCat.com, joining us here as he always does on Thursdays on Sports Daily. With the couple minutes we have left, TJ, first off, we'll pick that game and the KU-Missouri game tomorrow, all the NFL matchups we'll pick tomorrow with the whole crew for our Friday football pick. So that'll be fun tomorrow on the program. Also tomorrow on the show, we'll talk a little catch at Kansas. We'll talk some high school football as all the area teams get ready for that. So we'll talk more about it tomorrow, but just real quick, What are some of the big matchups that we're looking forward to?
Yeah, game of the week. We're getting everything ready for it. Hayes coming down to Derby. Hayes went all the way to the 5A state championship last year. First time ever for them. And then Derby's been there a bajillion times, basically. So that's going to be a really fun one, week one, a matchup that we don't typically see between the AVCTL and the WAC. So a lot of fun in that one. Wichita Collegiate going down to Wellington, week one. Those are two teams that always go deep in the playoffs the past couple of years. Wellington lost a lot. Collegiate's got a Division I caliber wide receiver on their team. Wellington is coached by an awesome coach down there, and Coach Meeks. Really excited for that one. Cape and Andover is on the list. So a lot of fun ones week one, a lot of pretty marquee matchups. We're going to learn a lot about these high school teams and how much they lost, how much they bring back, who's going to be a contender, and we're going to be able to answer a lot of that after just one Friday. So a lot of fun just tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah, we'll dive into that more in depth tomorrow on the program and some of the major marquee metro area high school football matchups. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll do that tomorrow. High school football coverage, by the way, on Sports Daily is brought to you by Zintex. Remodel your bathroom in as little as one day with Zintex Remodeling Group. All right, that's going to wrap it up for a Thursday edition of Sports Daily. Our thanks to all of our guests today. It was a jam-packed show. Jay Delling, Heritage Classic, PJ Glasser, our betting insider, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. If you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcasted version on the free Odyssey app. Tomorrow on the show, we'll do our Friday football picks. We'll get you ready for the Chiefs and the Chargers. Coming up today on the program, Rich Eisen follows us at 11, Jim Rome at 2, the Chris Klieman Radio Show at 5 o'clock. We've got the NFL kickoff game, Cowboys and Eagles, right here on KFH, beginning at 6 o'clock. The Royals, they move over to KNSS AM. They wrap up their series against the Angels. TJ, I'm glad you were able to join us today.
Gosh, me too. Tomorrow we got picks. I'm setting the alarm. I will be there on time in a timely fashion.
Sounds like a plan. Brandon Zinner will join us for the entire show tomorrow as well. For Max, for TJ, for all of our guests today, I'm Tommy. We'll see you tomorrow.